When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Hello and welcome to The Best in the World with Richard Parr. It is another week where we learn from the greatest sports stars on the planet. They are world champions, Olympic champions, world record holders and world number ones. They give us actionable insight that we can use for our everyday lives. I've got a fantastic guest for you this week and I'll tell you all about him in just a moment. But first, I want to tell you about 99 Designs. 99 Designs is a design website where if you need anything created or designed, such as a t-shirt or a logo or a business card or a website, then you can get 99 Designs to do it for you. What they do is they offer it to talented freelancers all around the world, and then you work closely with these freelancers to get your ideal product. It is something that I've personally used. I used it when I created the logo for Sportacino. Take a look at it at sportacino.com. And it is a product I really recommend. And because I personally use it, I would like for you to use it too. Why don't you go and check them out? Just head to sportacino.com/99designs. Trust me, you will really, really like what they produce for you. And in fact, if you don't like what they offer in the first place, you can get your money back. All of the terms and conditions are, of course, on their website. Head to sportacino.com/99designs. This week's guest is Casper Steinpfaff. Casper Steinpfaff is a stand-up paddleboard world champion. In fact, he's won a title in that sport four times at a world level. And he is fantastic on a whole range of topics, including overcoming fear. What's amazing about Casper is that he used to be scared to put his head underwater, and now he is a multi-time world champion in a sport which takes place on water. Pretty amazing, huh? Well, he gives us an insight into how he was able to overcome his fear and gives us tips on perhaps how we can overcome our fear, whether it's to do with water or anything else that comes up in our lives. He's also really good at goal setting and how we should look to have incremental goals. He'll explain more of that in the podcast. Plus, he talks about his amazing attempt at trying to paddle from Norway to Denmark. Or in fact, I think it was Denmark to Norway, the other way around. But either way, it's still 130 kilometres. And Casper just failed short slightly, but he'll explain exactly what happened in what is an amazing attempt of human performance. We love talking about high performance, sports performance, and learning about things we can learn in our everyday life. So let's get to it. Let's learn from the very best, the best in the world, the stand-up paddleboarding world champion, Casper Steinpfaff.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Casper Steinpfaff, welcome to The Best in the World with Richard Parr, a world champion in paddleboarding. It's so great to have you on the program. But you have such an amazing story, because tell me if I'm wrong here, but you were actually scared of water to begin with. Is this true?
Yeah. Thanks, Richard. Actually, it's a funny story. Like growing up in the cold north, the country of Denmark in Scandinavia, I grew up in this small fishing village where people were used to working in the ocean and people didn't really play much in the ocean. And I remember as a kid, I had this really strong phobia of getting my head underwater. And whether it was in the swimming hall or playing with my dad in the waves, I just did not like the idea of getting my head wet. And I think my dad never expected me to become a surfer. He thought I was going to be a fisherman or a skier or something, something like that.
So how did you eventually overcome it?
Well, you know, surfing was something I always did with my family. And like, even though I was scared of water, I would still go out on with my dad on his big tandem surfboard and catch waves. But I think for me, what really got me past my phobia and like past that mental barrier was when my friends started surfing. When I was like 10 years old, I had two really good friends in my class that also got the surf bug. And one thing led to the next. And you know the feeling as kids when you start, you know, being competitive and pushing each other in a healthy way. So I felt so much in love with surfing that I had to find a way to get past my fear. And the fear actually turned into a good thing because today I still stay mindful of fear as a good thing.
Mm. For anyone else who would be in a similar situation to you, say a young 10-year-old or even an adult who's scared of the water, do you have any tactics or do you have anything that you'd recommend to people to help get over that fear?
You know, I think we all have fear in lives. Like no matter if you're a surfer or you're a mountain climber, or it could be in any type of thing in everyday life, like standing up in front of a group of people to give a speech. It can be nerve-wracking and scary. I think from the best advice I could give anyone is to just breathe and really try to understand what it is you're doing. Because it's like if as a kid, I remember I would look at the ocean and I would just be like completely awestruck. Like, wow, this is such a big element. Like, how can I even go out there and survive? And sometimes I think we humans intimidate ourselves much more than we actually have to. So it's really good to sometimes take a step back and breathe and like maybe like talk to someone about what's actually happening in front of you. You know, I don't think it's a healthy thing to just walk away and isolate yourself. If you have a bad experience swimming, for example, I think one of the best things you can actually do is try to work with that fear and turn it into something positive, like take lessons. And when you conquer that fear, everything, like, it just feels like the world is at your feet.
Mm, it becomes a real achievement, doesn't it?
Exactly.
So you started off kind of playing with your friends and being competitive with your friends, and you are considered Denmark's only pro stand-up paddleboarder. So how are you then able to kind of develop it? Because obviously you're going to hit a plateau of a level with your friends. So how did you get good enough to be one of the best in the world? What was the next step for you?
Well, I mean, it's been one long journey for me that I look back at in different phases. Hmm. Like obviously after I got into surfing with my friends, my dad's from California, from a place with a rich surfing culture. And he, you know, I come from Denmark. Denmark is a great country, but it doesn't have all the best waves in the world. So my dad quickly realized that when my brother and I got the surfing bug, he made sure to travel with us abroad. Like we went to the island of Madeira in Portugal.
Oh, wow.
Which is an island that's very similar to Hawaii in its geographical sense, that it's an island surrounded by deep water and a big ocean, which equivalates to really powerful waves. And, you know, I think that's actually a very big key in my upbringing was that our dad exposed us, my brother and I, to surfing waves of consequence, where you had to really develop your skills and also your skills as a human to understand when is the time to paddle out in the surf and when is the time to not paddle out when it's too crazy. So I think that was, you know, that was the next step for me, engaging in waves of consequence, and that that definitely gave me a hunger to push myself even more.
Is that something that you just learn instinctively, or is there anything you could potentially tell our listeners for what to look out for when not to paddle out?
It's something in life that we all face. As surfers, you know, we love playing in the elements of Mother Nature. We love the satisfaction that riding a wave to the beach can give us. It's a sort of adrenaline kick. A lot of people look at surfers and you know, we're kind of, what do you call us? We're like labeled as adrenaline junkies by a lot of people, I think. And, you know, I don't agree with that, because of course we love the kick of feeling alive and the power we're surrounded by. But as a surfer, you know, there's also just some conditions out there when the waves are too big or the currents are too strong that you have to say, look, I'm not master of the ocean. Mother Nature can do whatever she wants to me, and I can't do anything about it. So like, I think it's very important to look at, I mean, for everyone, like when you go to the beach, for example, look at the conditions on that given day and decide, is this something beyond my experience level? Like, can I cope with this? And actually, I have the biggest respect for people that are capable of making the choice of not going out, because that actually explains that you have a deeper understanding.
Just talking hypothetically here, though, do you sometimes need to go out on those challenging waters at times just to push yourself a bit further? Or is it just understanding where your level is at?
Well, that's a tricky question, because you can say that if you always go out in conditions that you feel comfortable in, you're never going to progress. So it's kind of like a dichotomy of what you have to go. It's like you surf conditions and you paddle out on days when you feel happy about it and good about it. But then, you know, you also got to push your limits at some point. And it really comes down to all the experience you've accumulated over time that puts you on the beach on this given day with these, you know, possibly big waves breaking. And if you feel that you understand the way the ocean is working, like you see the mechanics, like how to break through the rip currents and stuff, then you got to go for it. But it's only when you see the green light, like all of a sudden you see a pattern, so to say. It's like a skier sees certain lines in the mountains. It's like a track. It's like a mountain biker sees certain trails and obstacles. All of a sudden, as a surfer, you also see lines that are possible that you deemed impossible just maybe days before. So it's really fascinating. Like, you got to push the limits at some point, but at your own level.
Yeah, I guess it's like a rock climber who normally goes up one route and then has always thought another route's too hard and has tried it and then is actually able to do it, while others would be like, no, I'd never go that way.
Exactly. Like, I'm so fascinated by climbers in the sense that, you know, it's really about using your imagination and also logic, I guess, you know, what's possible and what's not. But I'm really fascinated by a lot of different sports. And I mean, as a surfer and as a stand-up paddler, I'm always inspired every time I get to go on the ocean in a new location where I have to read a whole new set of conditions. Like surfing in Denmark is not at all the same as, say, for example, going surfing in Cape Town in South Africa. Just as an example, it's that's what's magical about it, right?
It is. Well, Cape Town is one of my favorite places in the world. And you mentioned Madeira earlier. Where is your favorite place to paddle in the world? Because I'm guessing you've been to a lot of different places.
Yeah, you know, I get that question once in a while, and you know, I feel very fortunate and thankful to have, through my sport, been able to explore many corners of the world. There's two places I kind of come down to. That's like my two dream places. One is Iceland, in the North Atlantic. Iceland is such a fascinating place because it's a great, beautiful location to go paddling. Like, whether you want to go on a stand-up paddleboard and paddle in the fjords next to the big icebergs, or you want to go surfing in the wild waves. I mean, Iceland's kind of got it all, and you have, you know, just the power of Mother Nature with the big mountains and volcanoes. I just feel I feel awestruck every time I get to go there.
And you mentioned the logic there of different sports. And are you a person who's interested in like logical thinking, and is that something you look into beyond your own sport?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, I consider myself, you know, an athlete, but I also, as a human being, like, I always feel very engaged in what's going on around me. But yeah, I mean, I guess in some ways you could say surfing is logical. Some ways it's totally emotional as well. It's really about the feeling and like this, the sensation of gliding across water. You know, actually, one thing I keep thinking of is a term I've come to really like is the French. They have a term for all the board sports, like whether you're gliding on water on a surfboard, or you're gliding across the snow, or skateboarding, or in motion. The French have this term called sports de glisse. Mm. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it really sums up the whole feeling of a board rider, that you know, you're it's kind of this feeling that you don't get anywhere else in life. And I'm 100%. I think I'm more feeling than logic.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
We'll be back with Casper in just a moment, but I wanted to tell you about Patreon. Now, Patreon is a crowdfunding website, a bit like Kickstarter, but the main difference about Patreon is it allows you to support your favourite creators on a monthly basis. You know, when you have a Kickstarter campaign, it's for one project, you put the money towards it. If you make the target, if they achieve their goal, then they get the money and then the project is over. What's great about Patreon is you become part of a community and you become part of helping your favorite creator on a regular basis, so you can see them grow, you can continue with their journey. And of course, our podcast, The Best in the World with Richard Parr, is on Patreon. It's one of the ways that we're looking to help monetize this program so we can keep it on the air, so we can continue to learn from the greatest sports stars on the planet. Head to patreon.com/bestintheworld for more details. And you'll see there's lots of different tiers there of how you can support, from as low as $1 a month. Just think, you probably spend at least $3 on a coffee a day. This way, at $1 a month, ideally $5 or ideally a little bit more if you can afford it, you will help keep our show on the air and you'll continue to be able to learn from the very greatest sports stars on the planet. That website address again is patreon.com/bestintheworld, and we'll have lots of different things on there for you, including bonus content, including a little heads up on some of the guests we've got coming up on the program. Just again, head to patreon.com/bestintheworld. All right, let's return to Casper Steinpfaff.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Stand-up paddleboarding is not really on the Olympics. It's not really what you'd see on TV usually, but it is a growing sport. Can you just explain to us what a typical race would involve, Casper?
So stand-up paddling is, yeah, it's still a new sport. It's growing really fast, and all across the world, you're seeing races. The racing part of stand-up paddling is really thriving, because you can paddle anywhere. There doesn't have to be big waves. You can do it in flat water locations on lakes and fjords and stuff as well. Mm. But a typical stand-up paddle race is like a five-kilometer course. It could be anything from just a cruise down like a canal, through a beautiful landscape. You know, there's a couple different styles of races. But the most action packed and exciting one for me is, it's called the technical race. And it's like a 4 to 5 kilometer race where you start on the beach, you run with your board into the water, And it's kind of like the border cross of stand-up paddling, where you have to turn around buoys.
Oh, wow.
And you have to come back to the beach. You have a caddy that picks up your board for you while you have to run up around these chicanes on the beach and stuff. And it really is kind of like a border cross. And, you know, what's cool to me about stand-up paddling is that it's so dynamic. I mean, you can do all these crazy surf moves, like, you know, you can race through the surf as well, which creates an extra excitement level. But you can also just take it on expeditions. You know, you can go to your local lake or wherever your imagination takes you. So, well, I guess I was talking about a stand-up paddle race and I went off on this tangent, but...
No, it's interesting. What's been your favorite race you've ever done?
Probably my favorite race from like personally, like from an action-packed point of view, is when I won my third world title. It was in Fiji last year, where I was racing in the final of the technical race at a remote location called Cloudbreak. It's a legendary surf spot. And we had the race there. So part of this race was we had three laps of a kilometer each. And on each lap, you had to go through the surf and catch a wave as well. And it was just so awesome. Like the waves would separate the field and like the guys that were in front, all of a sudden they would be in the back. And it was really like the peloton was getting all mixed up and you couldn't, you know, it's just impossible to guess who was going to win. Oh, and, wow. For me, it was my favorite because I had a good start, but I fell back into the peloton and I was like I was in fourth or fifth spot most of the race, and I was kind of over it and I'd given up almost at the end. And on the last leg, sure enough, this wave comes out of nowhere. I see it and like dig really hard with my paddle and push my hardest to catch it. And sure enough, I catch it and like soar from fifth to first.
Wow.
And get to cross the finish line and raise my arms. So that's the beauty of stand-up racing to me. You never know what's going to happen.
as a two-time champion going into that race, was there a lot of pressure on you at all?
I would say there was a fair amount of pressure, especially given that I'd got two titles already and it was my favorite discipline. And pressure is an interesting thing because, you know, it can very much, paralyze you. And like, it's kind of like the fear of going in the ocean when I was a kid, like it could paralyze me, but you can also turn it around and use that pressure for something good. And I think because it was at Cloudbreak and the waves were firing, I just think I smiled and tried to have a good time, just catch some good waves. But, it was monumental, that's for sure.
What does your pre-race routine look like, Casper?
For me, I like to wake up, you know, roughly like 4 hours before my race starts. I'll put on some oatmeal, and I'll eat a lot of oatmeal before a race. That's what we do in Denmark.
how much is a lot?
So if you say like one regular size bowl, that's a normal portion.
Yeah.
I usually aim for 3 to 4.
That is a lot.
if I get to 3, I'm satisfied.
And anything in that oatmeal extra?
Yeah, you know, I found this love for applesauce, like organic fresh made applesauce and raisins and almonds, you know, a bunch of just basically, I don't like to put too much stuff in, just keep it simple, but get the energy food in there, like all the essentials. Mm. And then when I got my oatmeal in my bowl.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When eating it, I'd like to put on some tunes. I like to listen to heavy metal before my races.
Okay.
I like to put on some Iron Maiden and some other good stuff. Gets me going.
Superb. And what happens next? Is it then just heading to the event?
Yeah, so then I go to the event, and that's a very interesting thing as well, because at the event you're not isolated anymore. Like you're in the spotlight from the moment you get to the event site, and whether it's journalists or photographers that want to catch up with you or fans, you know, you gotta sort of balance that, because being a modern athlete is not just, in my opinion, being a modern athlete is not just winning and staying focused on your training. It's also meeting people, and you're like you're a character in a play that, you know, people want to be part of your story as well. And I try and maybe until like up till an hour before the race, I try to be open and answer questions and pose for photos and, you know, hang out with people. But that last hour before it's time, I like to just isolate myself, put in some more good music, start doing some on land warm-ups, getting the blood flowing in my body, and then, you know, get ready for battle, kind of like the old Vikings do.
Was there a moment then when you were kind of, you say you've got a lot of people asking you questions and wanting to speak to you. Was there a moment where you went from, I'm just this guy turning up to an event and no one really knows who I am, to, oh, everyone wants to speak to me and talk to me? And was, if that did happen, how easy was that transition?
It's fascinating thinking back on my journey. Like, it was when I started competing, I was very, you know, very mellow about it. I always wanted to win, and I'll do my best to win. But at events, you know, it was easy because no one, you know, I was just Casper. Like, I was not a big name or anything. But then I think the moment it really became apparent to me was this year in we had the World Championship in Denmark, in Copenhagen, in cold Hawaii, and you know, just the contrast since my first race in 2009. To how I was standing in the summer in Copenhagen was the biggest contrast of worlds I've ever experienced. Like, where people wanted to, you know, wish me luck and, you know, want to make sure I'm ready or whatnot. It's definitely been a transition, and I'm very thankful that so many people follow what I'm doing and have followed my journey. Cause I've been doing stand-up paddling and racing because it's my passion and the goals I wanted to achieve. But if you'd asked me like 6 years ago if I would ever be on top of the world, I don't know what I would have answered, because this is kind of completely out of this world where I am now. And it was crazy.
Right, so it sounds like you become an excellent ambassador for Denmark and for the sport. And has that encouraged more people to join the sport from your country?
I would say that, you know, stand-up paddling has been on a wave of popularity in recent years. It's still growing here in Denmark. I mean, in Denmark, we have 7,000 kilometers of coastline, of waterline, and, you know, it's just the perfect place for stand-up paddling. And that was one of the goals with the World Championship this year, was to highlight that we have all this water and, you know, these great accessible beaches. So, stand-up paddling is definitely growing, and to see, I think to me, what means the most personally is seeing kids, you know, young kids that, that embrace this new sport and dream. Like I see in some of my younger friends, like their dreams of racing and becoming top of the world, but also traveling the world and viewing the planet we live on through the glasses of this sport. So that's what makes me really happy, is that I can be part of inspiring the next generation. Mm. And that's what we're going to look back at eventually as athletes, is what legacy do we leave behind, and is it something we're proud of? That's, I think every athlete can relate to that.
Mm, yeah, it's really important. And you mentioned the travel there again, Casper. And what's great about the world today is we can fly most places. Yet earlier this year, you decided to paddle from Denmark to Norway, which I believe is about 130 kilometres. Why did you decide to do that, Casper?
Why did I decide to go back to living like the ancient Vikings?
Pretty much.
I know why. It's you know, we live in a world where we have a lot of luxuries around us. We're able to live the lifestyle we want. We can choose whatever education we want. We can choose a lot of things, what sports we want to do. I think for me, what it came down to was that ever since I started stand-up paddling, I kept dreaming about this vessel I was on, like what is the limit? How far can I go? And I always grew up with stories of the ancient Vikings, like drawing out beyond the horizon, you know, to whether it was out of, you know, the Vikings probably did it not just out of a will to go see what's beyond the horizon, but you also got to, you know, deal with the situation you're in. And, you know, it was not always easy. But for me, paddling across the Skagerrak Ocean, which is what it's called, between Denmark and Norway, was to test myself in the ultimate challenge. Mm. Can I do this? And it's the fascination of what lies beyond the horizon. And like my forefathers, it was something I set out to do on a dark February morning at 5 a.m. This year, and it was a it was a very long journey. It was 130 kilometers, and after 16 hours of paddling and 54,000 paddle strokes, I had to call it quits. I had to stop my crossing because it was Mother Nature turned against us. I had a following boat with me, and my safety crew and I deemed it was not responsible to continue fighting because the conditions were deteriorating. A storm was brewing, and it was probably one of the most bitter moments in my life because I was only 12 kilometers away from the coast of Kristiansand, which was my destination. Mm. But I could see the lighthouse, and I was at this point I was actually laying down on my board because the waves were so big and unruly that no matter how much effort I put in, I just could not stand up. So I was laying on my board paddling and looking at my GPS, and I was not moving. I was like at a standstill, and it was a very bitter moment that I put so much energy into it, but I also realized, hey, I'm not the master of the ocean. No matter how much I want to make it across and reach this achievement, it's just not going to happen today. Mother Nature has other plans.
Did you have enough in you then to do it had it not been to do with the weather? Quite how tired were you at that stage?
I mean, after 16 hours, I was feeling very fatigued. My legs were kind of shot because, I mean, try standing up for 16 hours. It kind of gets to you.
I can't do it for 2 hours, and that's not even on a board. But
well, you know, I think, you know, my mind was still strong, and you know, when you're really determined and passionate about reaching a goal, you'll go to great extents. It's like a parent will go to great extents for a child they love. And for me, I just, no matter how much I wanted to, my body just couldn't do it more. My legs were gone, and actually my fingers were starting to as soon as I stopped paddling, it went really quick with the cold was setting in, and like I was getting close to some hypothermia type situation. And my fingers were all blue when I got on the safety boat. And actually, the craziest part of that crossing was the moment when we called it quits and I had to get back on the mothership. And the jet ski, which was the small safety craft, picked me up. And the waves were so big, and this boat was just like rocking back and forth. And it was the middle of the night. And I felt like I was in a scene of Deadliest Catch. Like,
oh, crikey.
I was seeing the waves crashing on the boat. And thankfully, I had a really good safety team with me, and they got me on board. But I was at the mercy of a greater power at that moment. And it was kind of humbling, actually. It was a very humbling experience.
Why February? Because I'm guessing it'd be a bit warmer if you'd have done it in June, July, August.
There would also be more light.
Yeah.
It was the choice for doing it in the winter was out of when I looked at the challenge, like I could do it in the summer and it would probably be a lot easier. But I have done long paddles in my life, and I felt what really made this expedition different than a lot of other expeditions I've done and others that have been done in the world is it was a winter expedition. And it's like, I guess you can compare it to, say, climbers. Mountain climbers that, you know, they also, there isn't a thing for like, say, north face ascents or winter ascents that, you know, they're not the easiest of times to reach a peak, but it's also a time where you're tested in a much more extreme way. And you're forced to find a set of skills inside yourself beyond what you normally have. And it was just the aspect of the challenge, because of course it would be hard in the summer as well, but it would be that much more satisfying, I would say, to do it in the winter. So you know, it, of course, hindsight, you know, maybe it was not the right decision, but I still stand by that it was the challenge I set for myself. And you know, it was, I made some mistakes, but I want to learn from my mistakes, and you know, hopefully give it a second attempt, because the dream is still alive within me.
In 2018,
yeah, you know, we're actually We're working on it, doing a second attempt in 18, hopefully in February, if conditions allow. You know, that's the other thing. You got to, with lots of winter storms coming through at these latitudes, you got to wait for the right moment to cross. So if everything goes right, I'll set out again in February from Denmark, going to Norway, and try to learn from what went wrong last time. And hopefully I can reach Norway and make a dream come true.
I'm sure that'll happen. I'm keeping my fingers crossed for no more storms when you next try it. when you were preparing for it, did you do anything differently to what you normally do throughout the season?
Yeah, so for me, the crossing to Norway, which I call the Viking crossing, it's an endurance deal. You're paddling, like, it's like ultra marathon. You're paddling probably between, probably up around 18, 20 hours, ideally. And my preparation for that is so much different than what I normally do for stand-up racing, because my type of racing normally is like more of a sprint or explosive style thing with lots of buoy turns and sprint situations. Whereas the crossing, I had to like find a very low intensity level of paddling, and I had to sustain that for a long time. So in my preparation, I did a lot of cardio training, long paddle sessions, lots of running at a low intensity, and just I think mentally preparing for, you know, being out there for a long time. I think that was almost the hardest part, was realizing, oh my god, I still have like 120 kilometers to go. Mentally was the hardest thing to deal with. And I had to find a method to break it down into segments, because if I always thought about the final goal of reaching Norway, which is like maybe 18 hours away, I would never make it. So I started breaking it into like 1 hour segments, and like every time I paddled 5 kilometers, I would give myself a high five and a smile. I feel like I achieved something. So I think, you know, and I learned that from the experience that, and in general in life, when a goal sometimes seems too big and overwhelming, you got to break it down and like give yourself waypoints, whether it's a business case you're working on or a hard training session. Break it into increments and give yourself the feeling of success every time you reach one of those waypoints. And then all of a sudden the big goal is a lot more achievable.
Wise words. When you're doing that, did you have music on you or nothing? On the 130?
In hindsight, I would love to have had music. I didn't have it, but I had a GPS on me, and I was, you know, actually I think I was singing to myself for some of the way, just you know, entertaining myself. Like I had some really good some Iron Maiden going and stuff.
Oh, so it's like a little concert.
Well, I was giving a concert, yeah, so to say. But my best source of entertainment was actually my following boat, where we had, you know, the cinematographers and the captains, and like my brother and my girlfriend were on the boat as well. You know, my best source of entertainment was listening. What's the status report on the boat? How many people are sick right now? who are getting seasick and who weren't?
Oh dear.
So it was, you know what? It was an adventure for not just myself, but the whole crew that was involved.
Because you've got a movie out as well, Standing on Water. Can you tell us a bit about that, Casper?
Yeah, so Standing on Water was it's a documentary movie, just under an hour. That's shows the upbringing myself and my brother have had growing up in Denmark and traveling with our family around the world to follow our passion. And it's really a movie about passion and following your dreams. And, you know, growing up in Denmark, which is not exactly the greatest surf nation. Like out in the world, when I say I'm from Denmark, for many years, I was met with the response like, "Do you guys even have waves in Denmark?" And it was kind of the movie Standing on Water shows the journey I was on to, show the world that Denmark was a legit surfing nation. And it also shows the community camaraderie of a small town, because Klitmøller, that small village I live in, is we only have 800 people that live here. And, you know, there's a unique feeling of fellowship and brotherhood. And it's a movie about passion and facing your fears. And I would recommend anyone with a deep passion for life to give it a watch. It's available for free to watch on Red Bull TV. And it's still it's amazing to see how the movie has touched people all around the world.
Fantastic. Well, I'm going to go. I haven't seen it yet, so I'm going to check it out. And now I know it's on Red Bull TV, I'll also put a link to it when we put this podcast out. Casper, it's been really great to talk to you. Where else can we continue to follow your journey online?
Well, I would suggest, I would humbly ask you to follow me on Facebook, Casper Steinfath, and my Instagram, CJ_Steinfath. I have a lot of adventures coming up in the next year. And actually, in not too long, hopefully, you can follow my attempt to complete my Viking crossing again. I'm gonna be streaming it live on a live tracker.
Oh wow!
So stay tuned to my social media, and you might be able to, pick up some news from the crossing as well.
Fantastic. Well, what other adventures have you got lined up? Can you tell us, or are they under wraps?
Well, they're not under wraps. They're they're just waiting to unfold. I mean, I'm still, as an athlete, I'm still very focused on becoming my best. I still have a lot to learn, and I'm going to be chasing my fifth world title in November 2018. We're going to Brazil. I'm excited for that, and then I also look forward to trying some other challenges. I really got into kite surfing recently, and I had a good friend that signed me up for a race in Norway on kites. It's a snow kiting race called Ragnarok.
Wow.
Like the old Viking apocalypse. And it's a 100 kilometer long snow kiting race. So, yeah, I have quite a few challenges coming up. Some different, they're different in their nature, but that's also what's fascinating, grabbing whatever dreams come flying in.
Mm. So when you become a kite surfing world champion, we'll have to get you on here again.
Well, I'd be happy to come back that day.
Well, Casper, it's been so great to talk to you. Thank you so much for giving us your expert knowledge and experience, and thank you for being the best in the world.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Richard. Aloha.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Now, if you enjoyed that conversation with Casper as much as I did, you might want to check out a few of these other episodes on The Best in the World with Richard Parr. These are some of the real endurance superstars we've had on the program. Another paddleboarder was Damien Ryder. That's all the way back at episode 16. He broke 3 endurance world records when he paddleboarded 800 kilometers. Yes, you heard right, 800 kilometers from the Gold Coast to Bondi Beach in Australia. Have a listen to that. Around the same time, I also spoke to Lizanne Van Vooren. That was episode 17. Lizanne was part of the women's sailing team known as the Coxless Crew. They became the first all-women team to row across the Pacific Ocean. They traveled 8,446 miles for 257 days. Wow. Really good story from Lizanne on the podcast. Plus, I also spoke to Jamie McDonald. That was episode 55. He cycled from Bangkok to Gloucester. That was 14,000 miles. And he even went through Afghanistan, where he was shot at. He's got a fantastic story. Go and check out that episode. That is number 55, Jamie McDonald on The Best in the World with Richard Parr. Well, that's it for this week's podcast. Please subscribe if you haven't done so already. You can do it on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Acast, and most likely on whatever other podcast listening app you use. Maybe Overcast, for example, we're on there as well. Maybe TuneIn, we're on there. I'm not sure if they do a subscription, but I'm pretty sure they do. But either way, you can hear our podcast on TuneIn. I also give really good knowledge every Friday as part of my Friday newsletter. I give you a little bit of information about what is going on in the world of sports and The Best in the World with Richard Parr and Sportacino. All you got to do to make sure you never miss a nugget of information is go to sportacino.com/email. That's sportacino.com/email. All right, that's it for this week. But guess what? Next week is our 100th episode. Yes, we are hitting triple figures. It is an amazing feat to have been able to have spoken to 100 world and Olympic champions, world record holders and world number ones to find out what they do differently from the rest of us. I've got a fantastic guest for you. I spoke to her only about a month ago. It's been in the locker. I've been saving it for you for this 100th episode. You do not want to miss it. It will be out next Thursday. Until then, have a great week. Goodbye.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.